Hi, I'm Chris Ippolito, and welcome to the Get Coached podcast, where I'm documenting my journey from employee to entrepreneur while featuring the coaches that are helping me along the way. Each episode, these coaches provide actionable advice to help me and you, the audience, find more success as entrepreneurs. I invite you to join the journey so we can go and grow together. Welcome to another episode of the Get Coach podcast. In this episode, I sat down with Jordan Gross, who is an author, TEDx speaker, entrepreneur, and coaches people on how to uncover their cloud nine life. Jordan and I discussed the value of storytelling and how it's a great skill for any entrepreneur to learn. Please enjoy this conversation with Jordan Gross. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, what's going on, Chris? How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. Doing very well. It's an exciting Saturday morning, April 11th, 2020, in the midst of something unprecedented, right? So when your listeners 5 years in the future look back and they're listening to this episode, we are in our homes quarantined for, I don't know about you, three to five weeks now at this point.
Yeah, about that.
I'm just grateful to be chatting with you. Obviously, we have the opportunity to connect and share a conversation like this. So thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to chat. And I'm just really excited to share a little bit about storytelling with your listeners, because we are in quite the story now. So maybe as we project into the future and think back to the times we're in right now, we can tell this story of how we got through it as a family, as a friend group, as a society. Right. So I'm just excited to be here with you, man. And I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you. Welcome to the Get Coach podcast. You're right. We are definitely in interesting times. Hence, if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see that Jordan has got a face mask currently under his chin.
Yeah.
but it's obviously this format, the podcasting format, It's great because it hasn't really stopped me or us who like podcasts and do podcasts to be able to continue doing it, which maybe that's going to be another catalyst to growing the podcast community as it's already been growing. But yeah, as you mentioned, we're going to be eventually talking about storytelling, but I always love to start off every episode with having my guests share their story as far as, you know, where have you been? Where did you start? And what's that journey look like to ultimately bring you to where you're at today and what you're doing today?
Absolutely. And you know, you mentioned the mask, and where I've been is New York City. So for the last couple of weeks, I was in my apartment for, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, just trying to self-quarantine as best as possible. And then now I'm at home on Long Island in New York, where my family is. So that's why I have the mask. I'm still being cautious. I'm in, you know, I'm in my brother's room right now. My dad's using my room as his office because he's working from home. So we're just in a chaotic time, but we're all figuring it out. But that's the explanation of the mask and where I've been literally in the last couple of weeks. But now about my story. So I was, like I said, growing up on Long Island, and I was a kid who was just going through the motions. I was on the hamster wheel of life as somebody who was following a path that was dictated for me. And what I mean by that was that when I look back and I think about my childhood and my preteen years and my teenage years, I don't even remember having a sense of individuality, right? I was an athlete. So I played soccer 5-6 days a week. I was a goalie. So I did 5 days of team practice, 1 day of goalie training.
I was a keeper too, actually.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to chat about that.
Yeah. That was great. So there I was this goalie really trying to make it big, you know, and I was trying to mix academics with athletics to get into the best college possible. That was the path that I was supposed to go on. So I did my schoolwork and I did my homework and I studied hard for my tests and I trained hard for my sports and I was successful, right? And I put that in quotes if you're just listening to this, because I finished toward the top of my class academically and I was getting pretty highly recruited for soccer. And, you know, the next step on the on this, you know, hamster wheel ladder, whatever you want to call it, was to get into a good college and play soccer and, you know, try to continue on this route. But when I realized that soccer wasn't going to be a professional endeavor for me, it was okay, what's next on the hamster wheel? So I had teammates, I had my brother's a couple years older, so his friends were guys who are similar to me personality wise. I had fraternity brothers who just said, okay, what you do now is you study finance and economics and business and you get internships and you get a good job and you go make a lot of money and you have a good life. And again, looking back, I was just following orders. I was just doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing. I was never really thinking for myself. I was never thinking about my own fulfillment, my own happiness, embracing any sort of purpose or sense of what I wanted at all. So I was just, again, following in the path of what other people told me to do. And I was getting good internships in finance and consulting. And I started to have this, a little bit of a differentiation from what everyone was telling me. And I knew I didn't want to go into these things, but I still didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. And it wasn't until I got back from studying abroad in Prague my junior year that I came back and I said, okay, let me really try to make an imprint on society. Let me try to start something. So I started this Alzheimer's awareness organization in honor of my grandfather at Northwestern, where I was going to school. And I loved it. I loved starting something from the ground up. I loved building something based off of relationships. I loved adding value to other people, right? And the journeys that they were going on. I loved helping. So that was an experience that I look back and I think was pretty transformative. But anyway, even with that experience, I was still going through the motions and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. So people told me, you know, why don't you get a master's degree or continue your education? You like school, right? And I was like, yeah, sure. School's fine. So I went and I got a master's degree in management studies so that I could be a better leader of this Alzheimer's organization. And this was the year where I was in a program academically that wasn't super rigorous. So I had a lot of free time. And with that free time, you know, kind of for the first time, because in college I was a little bit of a partier. I just spent most of my time with friends doing social activities as opposed to, you know, trying to really make a mark on helping people. So I decided to change gears a little bit and I spent time in the entrepreneurial community. I spent time volunteering. I spent time really trying to understand what I wanted to do while I was doing this master's program. I started reading a lot. I started listening to personal development podcasts and listening to audiobooks. And I kept hearing this word, you know, follow your passion. What's your passion? What's that going to be? And I thought mine was in the food and restaurant industry. So I know total 180, but I was trying to create this story of here's a kid who is following the traditional path, finance and consulting and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden goes into the restaurant world. And I was going to tell this story where I would look back and say, you know, I started as a 22-year-old kid and there I was. By age 35, I had my own restaurants all over the world and I would just work my way up and be a restaurant owner. But what happened was I fell into this opportunity where I did this rotational leadership program with a big restaurant group. And I thought that was it. I thought this was going to be what I did day in and day out. But very quickly, I realized that I chose that job for the wrong reasons, for the traditional reasons. And those right. reasons were more aligned with finances, the prestige, the highlight of being a 23-year-old leader at this organization where some people were three times my age, but I was their boss, right? And I thought that was cool at the time. I was told that my position was like the Goldman Sachs of the restaurant industry. So even though I wasn't doing the banking world and actually working at Goldman Sachs, here I was on my own journey. At the peak of where I could have been in this new world. So I just thought that was really cool. But I learned really quickly, that that wasn't what I wanted to do. So about 4 months in, I just finished up like a 15-hour day, and I was actually in the restaurant. I was the manager for the day, learning what that was all about with, you know, client engagement and managing a team of servers and managing the chefs and things like that. And I was doing my end of the day paperwork, and it was like, honestly, 4 or 5 in the morning. I don't even remember. I'm in my nice suit and tie, and I just had to go into the meat freezer to do the end of day inventory count. It was the last thing I had to do. I had to go in there and then come back to my office and plug in the numbers on an Excel sheet, send it out to the company-wide email so that everything was good to go. And I come out of the meat closet, got my gloves on, and I walk over to the office, and the door is locked. At that point, it was the only place I needed to be. And I tried to finagle with the door, but I don't know how to pick a lock, so I couldn't get in. And people were going to show up for their morning shifts in like an hour anyway. So it's not like I would have stayed there and done nothing. But I couldn't get into the office. So I just sat on the floor, and I thought, what am I doing here? What am I really trying to get out of this experience? And I thought about the value I was adding to people, and I considered where I was sitting on the floor about to plug in meat numbers into a spreadsheet, just having typed up guest complaints that their signature cocktails were rung up wrong by the server. So there was a little bit of their taste buds didn't feel right. And it was just ridiculous. Things that were so ridiculous to think about in that moment. I always say that I was in New York City on Park Avenue, right? In a very upscale restaurant for people like who I didn't want to be, for business people, for investment bankers, for consultants, right? And I always say that I was feeding the rich when I think that I'm supposed to be feeding the poor. I think I'm supposed to be helping people who maybe can't afford these types of experiences. So that was really all I needed. I needed that door to be locked for me to say, there's a reason why this door is locked, and it's because I should never go back into that office. I should never type in these excuses. I should never type in this meat inventory anymore. It's not what I'm supposed to be doing. So I quit the next day. And I quit the next day, and I thought about what I enjoyed from my experience in this restaurant world, the 4 months in it, and what I enjoyed from all of my experiences. And it always came back to really starting something and watching it grow. It came back to adding value to other people, and it came back to building relationships and communicating with people and seeing where it takes me, right? So with those three things in mind, I thought, how do I share that message? And I wrote my first book. I self-published the first book 2 months later, and it was about positivity and optimism and communication and happiness and fulfillment. And it was a morning routine that was the specifics of it, but it was really how this routine helps overcome stress and anxiety. And I used anecdotes. I listened to people's stories. I told my own story, and I got immersed in this world of personal development. And I started coaching, and I started writing more, and I started doing speaking engagements. I started going on podcasts, and I did that for about a year until I came to this next crossroads of, do I double down on this concept? Do I go back and get a real job? Do I come up with a
real job?
Yeah,
real job. Quotation marks, right?
New book. And it came back to another story, this another pivotal moment in my life that I'll always remember. I was riding in an Uber in New York City on the FDR right by the East River. And I saw a boat in the East River called Cloud Nine. And I asked my Uber driver what Cloud Nine meant to him. And he told me stories that I'll never forget. And he told me about the time that his child was born, or the time that he got married, or this moment of uninterrupted playfulness when he was a kid. And when I heard that those stories, I said, okay, there must be other people who've had Cloud Nine moments as well. So I started asking people about their Cloud Nine stories and how they live a Cloud Nine life. And then after I gathered all this information, I started to realize key patterns and themes with these Cloud Nine types of occasions. And I said, you know, for what I want to do in my life, do I want to just come out with another book that says, okay, here are some stories and this is what you have to do in order to live a Cloud Nine life? Or can I creatively tell these stories in a more fun, more entertaining, and more original and unique way. So I chose the latter, and I chose that because I think that in the personal development world, there are a couple different ways to share information. You could have this qualitative interview style approach where you share anecdotes. You could have the science-based approach. You could have the quantitative numbers approach where you do research studies. But I think there's a little gap for fiction, for creative storytelling, for entertainment in the personal development world. So that's what I decided to do. I wrote a fictional story about how you can live a cloud nine life. And it's a representation, a little bit of my own story, where somebody follows the traditional path. They go the normal route and they regret a lot of the decisions they made. But what I also show in the book is the path in which you go based off of your heart and your intuition, and you live more of the cloud nine life. So I think the key theme here in this long-winded personal story is that the moments in my life that I remember most, the Uber driver, the meat freezer, the starting the Alzheimer's Awareness Organization, they have the most depth. They have the most creativity to them. They have the most opportunity for me to share and dive deep into the story, the moment, whatever it was that I was doing at that time. So that's why I love storytelling so much. It's such a way for me to share with others not only my own thoughts and opinions and lessons that I want to tell, but I can do it in a way that's not just here's what you have to do. It's here's what I have done. Here's what others have done that are really, you know, opportunities for others to reflect and implement into their own lives, as opposed to just go ahead and follow advice aimlessly. Right. So that's where we're at.
That's awesome. What was the title of the first book? I don't know if you mentioned it.
Getting Comfy, Your Morning Guide to Daily Happiness.
Oh, okay. And
the second book's called The Journey to Cloud Nine.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's super interesting. There was a few parts as far as like your personal journey where it was like, whether it's God, the universe, whatever, like you believe in, or it's almost like they or it was trying to kind of nudge you along a bit of a different path.
Right. And you know what, to me, you know, the phrase, like everything happens for a reason, right?
Yeah.
I sort of believe that, but I always like to spin things around a little bit. So I believe that everything happens, right? Everything's going to happen. And then you get to assign the reason to it, right? Yeah. So when you're assigning a reason, why not assign a reason that is a story which is positive, which allows for hope, which allows for faith, which allows for this ability to push forward and enjoy every part of the process, right? So like you said, there were these maybe divine intervention moments, but it's because I assigned divine intervention to those experiences. It could have been I got locked out of the office and then I sat there and cried because I was not going to get in our numbers on time and I was going to get in trouble. And then the next day I was just going to say, you know what, like I got to be better, right? So that's the story I could have told. That's the thing I could have assigned to that experience. But I decided to tell a different story.
Yeah, I agree. I believe that in a lot of cases, what it is the door locking, what that situation could have been, I mean, whether you believe this or not, is that you subconsciously did that to yourself so that it would prevent you. It's almost like your subconscious was trying to give you an indication or a sign of like, hey, you're not really that happy here. So I'm going to start throwing some obstacles in your way. And hopefully you're going to pick up on those signals and realize that deep down inside, we don't want to be doing this. Mm-hmm. It's the same with the Uber driver, right? Something catches your attention and subconsciously, like something like that really grabbed a hold of you. So now consciously you went and asked the Uber driver, he shares a story. So same thing now, like you could have just accepted that as like, oh, those were great stories. I had a great drive with this Uber driver, I'm going to give him a 5-star review.
Right.
Life goes on. But again, like I'm a firm believer in that, like your subconscious is trying to like make you understand things and puts these signals in front of you so that hopefully consciously you're going to be aware of them. And then you kind of, I think that's the value behind meditation or concentrated thinking of just sitting there and thinking, is that you're starting to almost like bridge the gap between the subconscious and the conscious. But
yeah,
that's my woo woo belief, I guess.
No, it's woo woo, it's whatever. But you know, for me, it's about awareness, right? It's about awareness when things are a little bit different, right? Because I can expand on the Uber driver story. It came from a day in which I was, this was in November of 2018. And it was a normal Sunday where I went down to the lower part of Manhattan to a buddy's house, buddy's apartment. And we're doing our thing. We're, you know, cursing at the TV because our fantasy players weren't doing well in football. And we slow roasted a pork shoulder. And we were at first just, you know, talking about real guy stuff, right? But then something got brought up where one of our acquaintances from high school passed away. And we all started talking about it. And there's this moment of silence where we were just all like pretty deep in thought. We could tell we were deep in thought. And we started talking about life and death and purpose and fulfillment and just stuff we never talked about as a friend group, because we're more like happy-go-lucky, try to make each other laugh at all times kind of guys. So when we got deep, that was my subconscious saying like, okay, something's different about today, right? It's that that hyper-awareness of this is different than normal, right? So with that same theme of this is different than normal, I went into the Uber driver. I went into the Uber driver's car and something was different than normal. I sat in the back seat and I was silent. And usually, Chris, I'm the guy who is always trying to make somebody's day more human, especially if they're an Uber driver who drives people around and they probably don't have a lot of conversation, especially the cashier who just, you know, kind of robotically goes through and never really has conversation with humans. So usually I'd be asking a million questions to the Uber driver, but I didn't at first. I sat in the back and I wanted to continue reflecting on the conversation from the day. But when I saw that boat, again, it was this sense of hyper awareness where I just kind of said like, okay, now I'm supposed to go back to my normal self. I'm not supposed to sit here in silence. I'm supposed to change this person's day. I'm supposed to think about the other person in the car as opposed to just me who wants to be quiet, right? So I saw the boat and I asked him a question. It was probably the first word I said to him other than, hi, how are you? And that was when I learned, you know, yes, I should have been chatting with him and I'm glad I did, because obviously I gained so much from it.
Right. Yeah. It's, I think those moments are special in the sense that like being aware of the fact that it's breaking you out of your normalcy and to sometimes, I guess like enjoy that and whether sometimes it's going to actually be a negative experience. So I like to read, Stoic philosophy books.
Yeah, I love Stoicism.
And so a lot of that kind of teaches the fact that there's almost like lessons in everything, whether it's positive or negative. And in a lot of cases, especially the negative, have a lot of lessons to share with you. Yeah. But it's about being able to like almost like take a step back.
Yeah.
And observe and ask the question of why or what am I supposed to take from this? Or I think that's super important. It's almost I think the more common advice is to like slow down and smell the roses kind of idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. I love that stoicism piece and just learning. I've been thinking, especially with where we are right now with coronavirus, right? I've been doing a lot of research into uncertainty. And when we don't know what's next, when we're in unprecedented times, we kind of, what most people do is they interpret it as good or bad, right? But my saying, and it comes from the sports world, and I wish I would have thought like this as a kid, but it's probably too hard because all you want to do is win. But now I think what I would try to demonstrate to, you know, maybe when I'm a coach of my kids is I've got this new saying. It's if I win, I win. If I lose, I lose. But no matter what, I learn, I learn. So it's that last piece where no matter what happens in the situation, whether it is playing a sporting game event or whether it is handling such an extreme scenario as is self-quarantining due to disease, you don't know if you're going to win or lose, whatever you define as winning or losing in the scenario, but you are going to learn. You're going to learn a lot about yourself, the people around you, society, right? So again, when I tell stories, it's always projecting into the future and looking back at the story that I want to tell. So projecting into the future, looking back on this occasion where we are right now, I want to say that I learned. I learned about XYZ. That's always where I'm coming from when I'm sharing, you know, these stories.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree. It's perception, right? Good, bad. It's whatever you decide it to be at the end of the day. I wanted to chat actually about your our similar career of being goalkeepers in soccer, because anybody who has played sports, and especially team sports where there's a keeper of some sort, whether it's hockey or soccer, you realize real quick like it takes a different kind of person to want to be a goalkeeper, especially in soccer.
Right.
So what would be some of the lessons learned from that career of being a keeper that you sometimes apply to life in general, or like the way it evolved you as far as being a, like the person you are?
Yeah, I would say I'll share three key lessons here. The first one is that I love symbolism. I love like really enriching the meaning of things, right? So when you think about the word goalkeeper in and of itself, I didn't realize this growing up as an actual keeper, but when I look back, you know, when you're a goalkeeper, you're the person in charge of the team's overall goal. And the team's overall goal is to win the game, right? So you are the keeper of that goal, because if you don't achieve the goal, then the ball is going into the net, right? And you're not keeping in the way that you should, right? So especially now, I am very goal-oriented, so I am still a goalkeeper. I keep these goals, and I try to adhere to them as best as possible. But like I said before, I could win. If I win, I win. If I lose, I lose. No matter what, I learn, I learn. That's my mentality with goalkeeping now, and I wish it was when I was a goalie, because I was pretty emotional as a kid. If I let in a goal, I remembered every single bit of that experience leading up to the goal. But now it's sort of like, okay, what can I learn from letting up this goal or not achieving this goal or achieving this goal, right? So that's definitely lesson number one. Number two is about being the underdog. And this sort of ties into number three as well. So I'm 5'9". I'm not a tall guy, and I was
only 5'9" and you were a keeper.
So I was a 5'9" goalie, and it was about being an underdog, being in a position where I'm not supposed to be in, and then performing way surpassing anybody's expectations through hard work and dedication to the craft, right? So what I equate that to now is that here I am as a writer, speaker, and a coach, and I studied business in school. I studied economics and finance, and I didn't write an essay from my senior year of high school all the way until after my master's program when I wrote my first book, right? So I don't have training in this. Nobody expects any excellence of me in the world that I'm doing. So here I kind of am as an underdog, just like I was as a goalie, to really shine, to outperform expectations, and to be somebody who is far surpassing what anybody would expect. So that's lesson number two. And lesson number three has to do with penalty kicks. And penalty kicks were my favorite thing to do as a goalie.
Me too.
Because just like lesson number two, right? there's an expectation with penalty kicks in which you're not supposed to save the ball.
Yeah.
Right? They're 10 feet away from, I don't know what the, 12 feet away 12, from.
12.
Yeah. They're 12 feet away.
12 yards.
12 yards away from you. And you get this big, big goal. And it's like, they could put the ball anywhere. And how are you supposed to react to where the goal, where the ball is going? Right. So they're supposed to make it.
Yeah.
So when you make a save, when you actually do not your job, but you far surpass what you're expected to do in that moment, right? You are you're the hero, you know, you are the hero. And I think, again, the lesson for me now is, just like I'm in that penalty kick shootout, nobody expects anything of this new up and coming storyteller in the personal development world. Right here I am, I'm totally new, I don't have any credibility, so to speak, but little by little I'm making saves, you know. I'm they're coming up to the penalty mark and they're shooting and I'm guessing right, and I'm coming out with a new book, and I am getting on another podcast, right? And nobody expects anything of me, but I'm just here continuing to perform, continuing to shine as best as possible. And, you know, those penalty kicks, I think about them all the time, because it's that moment when nobody thinks you're going to succeed that you put on your best, you put your best foot forward and you make the save, right?
Yeah.
And just to wrap up, especially where we are currently with coronavirus, it's like nobody expects you to thrive in this time. Everybody is taking the back seat, and which is fine, by the way. You're allowed to, with something unprecedented as this, with so much uncertainty, you're allowed to feel however you want to feel. But the one thing people don't expect from others is for them to really embrace this situation and turn it into the best experience of their life, right?
Yeah.
But I think for me, I can kind of do that. I can focus on my health and fitness and do workouts within my house that make me feel better than I've ever felt. I can cook all my own food and feel better than I've ever felt. I can write thousands of words a day and then edit them the next day and write better than I've ever written in the past. You know, I can focus all my attention on my client, on my coaching clients for the hour or 2 hours a day that I speak to them. So it is for me, it's just like those penalty kicks where nobody is expecting you to excel right now, but that's exactly what I'm trying to do and I'm trying to share with other people.
Yeah. So. I would add to that, not only is it the expectations are against you, but similar to what baseball players say when it comes to batting.
Yeah.
Is that the same idea. You're not expected to hit all the pitches, mm-hmm. but it's in those failures almost that you excel. So it just talks more about, in general, like in the broad sense, you're not meant to succeed in everything you do,
right?
But you got to keep trying, you got to keep going, you got to persist, because sometimes it's this train wreck of failures, which will ultimately lead to one success, but that one success is what sets the tone for complete and holistic life success, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved shootouts because it was usually that one save out of all the shots that would end up being the difference between your team winning or losing. Yeah. And I loved the pressure of it. I loved the responsibility of that being on me as a goalkeeper. Those were a lot of the things that I enjoyed about being a goalkeeper,
and
or putting my body in harm's way to be able to do something that would help the team out. That's way you have to think as a keeper. It's crazy. Yeah,
that's a big one. No fear. It's the no fear mindset. And this is lesson number four, you know, just like you're doing. We're going on these entrepreneurial pursuits, right? And there has to be no fear. You have to literally dive in head first into every situation. You have to dive at somebody's cleat, you know, in order to have a positive result for your team, for your clients, right? So you are the one who's leading by example. You're going into every situation with that opportunity to really save the day, right?
Yeah.
So it's all about.
Yeah, it's a little bit of faith and confidence as well, because so tying it to entrepreneurial journeys.
Yeah.
Nobody starts their business thinking it's going to fail. There mm-hmm. is that in the back of your mind, like statistically it does. That's what happens. But an entrepreneur and most people that endeavor on business, they have that confidence and that faith. Maybe they could even lack the confidence, to be honest, but they have faith that if I stick to this and I learn what I need to learn and I keep doing it long enough, that the results will eventually come. And then perhaps now the confidence starts coming in once results start, like the positive start piling up. And but as a keeper, you have faith in yourself and your abilities, or at least that's the way I thought about it. It's like, yeah, I believe we can win this game. I believe I can make that save. I believe that I can do that. But you don't know until you try it, and then sometimes you don't. But right. if you don't go in with at least having the faith of it, then success is almost guaranteed not to happen.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've covered a lot, and the kind of the unique thing about our conversation is, though we wanted to talk about storytelling, and we will. Everything we did up to this point was storytelling. Right.
Yeah.
So why is that such an important skill set for entrepreneurs to develop and learn and try and get better at? Why would you say an entrepreneur should learn that skill set?
Yeah. So there are a lot of reasons I can just share, but let me share an example. You know, one of the oldest tricks in the book. Think about children's books for a second, or think about how we are able to get children to behave the way that we want them to behave, right? And obviously every child is different, but if you tell a child, don't go into the living room because you're going to get, you know, your shoes are dirty and you can't, you know, you don't want to break anything in the living room, they're probably going to first thing go into the living room, right? So how do we tell them not to go into the living room? We tell them that the living room floor is like lava. And if you go onto the living room floor, you're going to burn your feet because of the lava on the floor. Or we tell them that there are scary monsters in the living room. And if you go into the living room, then these monsters are going to grab you and you're never going to be able to leave, right? Think about children's books, you know, think about the story of Cinderella, or think about the story of Snow White, right? What are we trying to share? We're trying to share how we want people to behave in the world, right? But we do it through stories, because the stigma is that we don't like directly being told what to do. And I think that's because we want to learn and figure things out on our own, right? So when we share stories as entrepreneurs, we're allowing our customers and our clients to figure out for themselves why they should be using our products, why they should be using our services, right? There's a lot more power to that than sharing, you know, features, than sharing success, right? But success stories are great. So very specifically in the entrepreneurial world, I always think about these like heart-wrenching Apple or Google or Facebook commercials, right? And Facebook just came out with a coronavirus commercial. And it's this beautiful sort of, the person is singing yet also telling a song, and you can't really tell if they're singing or not, but it's just photos of different moments from the fight against coronavirus. And at the end, it could be a commercial for anything, right? You realize that it's Facebook. So they're not saying that we are a company that you know, you put pictures of yourself up on, or you can create events on our platform, and our new features allow you to get the news and have high quality photos on there. But what they're saying is that Facebook, through these pictures and the story that they're sharing, is that Facebook is an opportunity for communities to overcome adversity, to inspire hope, right? And that's the message that they're ultimately sending along at the end of the day. So what that is saying is that as a consumer, you're more likely to use Facebook because Facebook is sharing the story of what the work that they're doing, of how the work that they're doing is affecting others, as opposed to just telling you the what. They're telling you the why as opposed to the what. So that's the beauty of storytelling. You're really keying in on obviously people's emotions, but even more so than that, once you hit on emotions, you're allowing people to make decisions that feel like their own. And when people make decisions that feel like their own, there's a lot more power to that, because then it's like a win for them. Yeah. You know? So that's what I think is the key ingredient. It's that you're giving them a sense of individuality, even though the stories you're telling are not specifically about them.
Yeah. That I really like that explanation, because what it ended up making me think of was two different books that that are very valuable books for most entrepreneurs. They've come up quite a few times in the podcast. Is Start With Why by Simon Sinek. So right, you had mentioned that keyword of the reason you share a story is it's more the focus of why you want to use this product or service, or why to do whatever the outcome is. So that's key. And then the other one is allowing that person to ultimately really, like, whether they, people want to make the decision on their own terms, right? Like you said, and a book that actually specifically says that, and as is How to Win Friends and Influence People. There's a specific chapter that talks about, if you want to influence people, you have to make sure that they ultimately come to that decision on their own terms. So now all of a sudden you combine these two things, and it's storytelling that allows you to do that. And I think that's a valuable lesson in there's so many underlying principles when it comes to success in general. Mm-hmm. And there's if you start reading enough books and you start talking to enough people and you start kind of like your journey with how you came with the book of Living the Cloud Nine Life.
Yeah.
That's what I've started noticing when I've been doing this podcast is with now that you're the 34th. Yeah. 34th person I've interviewed. And when we have these conversations, and with all the books I've read and all the podcasts, you start seeing these underlying themes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's why is a big one, and the how to win friends and influence people, that's a little bit different, but like the why, that's so important.
Yeah.
So it's really cool that you brought that up, that really storytelling helps people identify the why.
Yeah. And it's cool that you noticed those two and shared those two books, because those were two of the first books I read in my personal development pursuit, in my own journey. Those were two of the very first books. And while we're on this theme of books, we honestly didn't even get into it of how I learned to tell stories. But one of the books that I read recently is called Stories That Stick by Kendra Hall. It's a very, very good book about really succinct principles on how to tell really effective stories. And just to share, I come more from the camp of consume a lot of stories and then create your own. So I'm not like a very rigid structure, but if you're somebody who likes rules and principles, then Stories That Stick is a really good resource on just specifics of good storytelling, powerful storytelling.
Nice. I'll probably have to add that to the to-read list. Mm-hmm. Do you mind sharing what was that journey for you as far as how to become a better storyteller?
Yeah. So it's honestly, it's been a lifelong journey when I really think about it, as cliche as it sounds. I love movies. I love books now. I wasn't always a big reader, but I love TV shows. I love, and then more recently, I love TED Talks. I love commencement speeches. And I love motivational videos. And I kind of put everything together to create my own stories. So I never took a course on storytelling. Like I said, I didn't even write an essay for like 5 years when I wrote my first book. This Kinder Hall's book was the first thing I read that was very factual about how to actually tell a good story. So for me, it was just my own individual process and emulating some of the most powerful stories that were touching me. So what I do is I just try to think about the stories that I love the most and then put my own spin on it. I don't think there has to be any structure that you follow. I'm not somebody to say that there are three ingredients for telling the perfect story and you have to have this, this, and this. But rather, I think it's really based off of telling a story for you, right? What story do you get most hooked on? What story do you attach yourself to? And then try to tell a story that is just like that. Because when you're telling a story, when you're an entrepreneur, you need to be your first client. You need to be the first listener of your story. When you're writing a book, you need to be your first reader, right? And you need to enjoy that. So I tell stories that I want to hear. And that's really important. So that's been my journey. And then, and I've got little tricks that I've picked up on that I can share if you'd like. But overall, you know, for me, it's about the individuality and the opportunity to entertain myself as I try to entertain others.
Right. I actually really like that advice of tell stories that you want to hear.
Yeah.
Because it just will, I feel like that would, it'll resonate more with an audience because you're almost like you're excited about that story. It's kind of the same idea with a podcast or YouTube channel. Create something that you want, and then you can start adjusting it based on what your audience feedback is. Because obviously you ultimately want to serve your audience. But if you start, like if I were to have started a podcast on, I don't know, just some other subject that I'm like, oh, according to the markets, people want to hear blank, whatever. And if I wasn't really that into it, maybe that passion would have developed or come about, but you're more likely to stick to something if you're already a little into it. And I mean, personal development, like you said, personal development, entrepreneurship, those are two areas that I've been, I hate using the word passion, but I've been passionate about that kind of stuff for a long, 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 long time. But
Yeah.
So we've definitely covered a lot. I know there are a few tips that you were hoping to share, but I just want to, in the interest of time, I want to kind of wrap things up, but maybe in my next question, you can answer it this way. But I always like to ask people before we wrap up, you know, what is that one piece of advice that you would suggest the audience take action on so that they can level up in the area of storytelling?
Yeah. So for me, storytelling, and I've said it a couple of times now, it comes down to crafting our life story, right? What's going to be the most entertaining, adventurous, movie-like experience we can make in our own lives so that when we project years and years into the future and we're a grandma or grandpa and we're telling our grandkids stories, what's going to captivate them, right? So whether it's decisions that you're making in business, in your relationships, in your personal lives, think about how you can be, I call it for myself, the superhero grandpa, right? How are my grandkids going to look at me as a superhero based off of the stories that I'm telling them about my life, about my business, about whatever it is that I'm doing? And the way that I become a superhero is by making decisions that are aligned with my heart, with my gut, with my intuition, and they're decisions that I make where I will not be going down a path in which I say, well, what if I would have done the other thing, right? No, it's I'm 100% clear on making the decision, and I don't regret not making the other decision. So that's what I want to say. It's sort of like, it's as simple as saying looking back with no regrets, but it's as complex as saying every single moment we're intentionally crafting the story with which we want to tell when we're 80, 90, 100 years old.
Right.
So that's what I think it's always going to come down to for me.
I really like that. That's such a cool way to think about it, is be the hero grandparent that you want to become now, like looking back at it. I think that's a really unique way of thinking about it. So that was really good advice. I really appreciate that. If people wanted to learn more about you and or connect with you, what would be that location? What's the best place for them to find you?
Yeah. So the best place to learn more is journeytocloud9.com. It's all spelled out, journeytocloudnine.com. And then LinkedIn is where you can actually connect with me. So it's just Jordan Gross on LinkedIn, and I answer every message there.
Awesome. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Jordan. Definitely looking forward to future conversations, because I think now that I've gotten to know you a little bit better, there's a lot of similarities and commonalities here. So, all right. Well, anything to wrap up?
No, I think especially, you know, if you're listening to this soon and you're in the midst of coronavirus yourselves, just stay safe, stay healthy, stay happy. Understand that with uncertainty, there is no correct response except the overly negative response. So just, you know, feel how you want to feel. But if you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. No matter what, you learn, you learn. So just keep going through this experience with faith and hope that we're all going to get through it. And I hope when you are listening to this, we are through it. So thanks again, Chris. And please reach out. Anybody. I'm always here to chat.
Awesome. Thanks, Jordan. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Get Coach podcast. If you're looking for more information, you can head over to our website, which is getcoachedpodcast.com. You'll find the show notes for this and every other episode there. And if getting actionable advice every week from professional coaches is something you want more of, then make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes.